I call this meeting of the House of Higher Education Finance and Policy Division to order. Members, please take your seats. We do have a quorum present when, okay, so there is a quorum present. Yes, okay. Got my new notes today. So may I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 19th, 2020?
So moved.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wolgamott. He makes a motion to approve the minutes for February 19th, 2020. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any discussion? I should have said that first, sorry. Any discussion? Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 19th, 2020 are approved. Okay. We are going to switch spots here with Vice Chair Fryer. I might go up to the podium.
Thank you, Chair. First, we have an informational hearing on the bonding request from the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Chair Bernardi will be presenting these in House File 3086. Chair Bernardi, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3086 is a bill currently in the capital investment that contains the 2020 bonding requests for both the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The purpose of the hearing is to hear so members can ask questions and learn more about the requests. Today I have with me Mike Berthelsen, Vice President of the University Services at the University of Minnesota, and Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at Minnesota State. Together we'll walk through the request a bit, and then they will be available to answer questions that you may have. So I just want to, so section one, just to let you all know, simply outlines the funding mechanism, which is a standard for bonding bills. And then we're going to move into section two and section three. Section two will contain the University of Minnesota's bonding request, and section three will contain Minnesota State Colleges and Universities' request.
All right, so we're ready for the next testifier, and if you would state your name for the record so we know which one of you is now testifying.
Mike Berthelsen, I'm the Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota. Thank you very much. Chair and members, we thank you for your consideration of our state capital request. It totals our request of you is $317 million, of which the university then would match another $58 million on top of that. Our first priority, of course, is HEPR, a standard that you're well familiar with, important stewardship resources to maintain the investment that you have made in the university for over 100 years, followed by child development building replacement, investment in number one ranked child development institute at the Institute, University of Minnesota, to renovate one building and to replace the other building. Then renovation of A.B. Anderson in Duluth, highly utilized humanities building, classroom building at the Duluth campus. Chemistry undergraduate teaching laboratory in the Twin Cities campus, really providing modern and expanded capacity for STEM chemistry teaching for undergraduates, a vital and critical pathway and course for all students at the university, especially for us to be able to put out the kind of graduates that the state needs. And finally, clinical research facility, both designs and land acquisition and site preparation, which would really extend the research, the investments you've made in health sciences investments, health science education center, and biodiscovery district to now allow the next phase, the next place of needed investment, which is how do we invest in clinical research to advance new treatments for the state of Minnesota.
Great. Please continue.
Very good. Good afternoon, Chair Breyer and committee. I'm Brian Yolitz, and I serve as the Colleges and Universities of Minnesota State as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. Pleased to be with you again, and thank you for your consideration of House File 3086. You'll see starting on page 3, or section 3, line 3.28, the bill supports Minnesota State's $271.2 million capital bonding request for the session. You should note that about $230 million would be geo-funded, and about $40 million of that would be user financing through MMB and our colleges and universities. The bill mirrors the capital investment priorities of our Board of Trustees and follows our bonding book that we shared with you some 2 weeks ago in this very room. At the top of page 4, you'll see priority number 1, $150 million for HEPR, for asset preservation at our 37 colleges and universities. It's about 92 projects across the state and impacting every one of our college universities. Projects at Anoka Ramsey College through Normandale College, MSU Moorhead, and Inverhills Community College all received funding totaling $14.5 million in the 2018 bonding bill and are ready to move to the next phase of construction with funding in 2020. The next priority is starting at subdivision 7 for St. Paul College, going through subdivision 11, the Northland Community and Technical College at East Grand Forks. Those are priorities 6 through 10 on the Board of Trustees list. They were all in the board's 2018 request. They had early support in the legislative session, but didn't make the final bill. And they're back again for revisiting with the session. And finally, there's 6 major projects that are new to the legislative process this year, starting with MSU Mankato, I think subdivision 12, following through Winona State University, Lake Superior College, North Hennepin Community College, Metropolitan State University, and finally Pine Technical and Community College. This bill reflects your strong support for the college and universities of Minnesota State, and together we'll have a significant and lasting impact on the students and the communities we serve. We're truly grateful for your support represented by this bill and your time and attention this afternoon, as well as your past support. Might you have any questions?
All right, so at this point, maybe we can take a pause. We've heard from both of the systems, University of Minnesota and Minnesota State system. Is there anybody from the audience that would also like to testify on these two bonding proposals? Testimony? All right, so maybe we can take a moment and you can organize your thoughts and your questions. And since the first presentation was the University of Minnesota, if you have questions on the University of Minnesota's proposal that we just heard and the bonding request, any questions from committee members?
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Yes, all right. Senator Grumbeck, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like the new facilities that are being proposed are primarily research facilities at the U. And it would be interesting to have data that just says, you know, here's the research that's going on, here's what's, you know, research that's been developed, already out, you know, out there being working. I don't know, is there any kind of story you have about all the research accomplishments?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have at the tip of my tongue a really good list of those things. I know that others behind me may. Otherwise, I'm sure they were taking good notes, and we can provide some more of that. I will say that of the projects that we're talking about, they both are educational research, so that's certainly true. I think we have that. There's sort of many of them are mixed. HEPR, of course, covers all things that we do, and just really it touches over 100 buildings across the system. Child development buildings, both is for education and research, so it's an integrated facility. AB Anderson is more undergraduate education, mm-hmm. And chemistry teaching is really 100% undergraduate chemistry teaching. So though in the science, it's not a research focus. The clinical research facility certainly is, and that is has a significant focus on obviously clinical research and creating new, taking the things we've created and learned in the basic sciences, biodiscovery district, and now how do you take that to the next step and turn that into active treatments. So, but I think we certainly can come with, provide better information about more recent research growth.
Sure. I mean, Madam Chair, I'd appreciate that. And I'm just thinking back about, you know, the history and all of the new ideas and innovations that have come out of the U. And but it's been, I don't know, 8 years since I've heard, you know, what's the latest. So I think it's nice to keep up with that.
Yeah. I wish Dr. Well. Fuller could channel through me right now at this moment, and then you would hear a whole boatload.
Thank you. Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine's more of a comment. A couple of us, I'm looking around the room, Representative Lehman, Representative Vang, and Representative Wolgamont, and I don't know who else is on the Capital Investment Committee, but we've been able to tour so many of these facilities through the university system and the MNSU system, and I tell you, they're doing some amazing work all over the state and with the dollars that they have, and it's kind of neat, having served on a couple terms, to see like the idea phase, you know, and then where they become reality, to sort of actually walk in some of the science buildings and other things, so to see, or the nursing labs. And you know, this year, Anoka Ramsey, for example, really stood out. And just to think, like, you know, a couple of years from now, if we do vote and approve this, that that'll become a reality, and what a difference that'll make for students. And I know, you know, you learn a lot from being on the bus and, you know, the talk. And there really wasn't any bad projects in either of your systems this year. I thought it was a really solid package, and really a testament to the work you're doing to, you know, we need you doing well to help Minnesota. And I don't know, I was really touched by it. And you know, there's so many different things all over the state that you don't even realize. I really encourage all members, if you get the opportunity to be on that committee, you can really learn a lot about the state. And I know, Chair Bernardi, you've been in a lot of these facilities, and hats off to you for that. And you just really can see some the good work. But I really I love how you start. Both systems are starting with HEPR, and to me, that's just really taking care of what we have. And just you, both systems, every campus we stopped at, they stressed the importance of that. And I just, that's a testament to you, you know, not necessarily about, you know, moving forward with new things, but making sure first off that we're taking care of what we have. And we fall very short in that area. Sorry to talk so long, but we spent a lot of time on different campuses, 17 days of tours and others. And anyways, it's thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative, for your comments. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just kind of following up on what Representative Lilly just said too. As a new representative, this being my first term, I was always shocked by the fact that we had 30 million square feet of space in both the Minnesota system and the state college system. And trying to, as Representative Lilly referred to, maintaining what we currently have. I would be very interested in knowing, when I was looking at the HEPR request, thinking about the other work that is not being done, right, because we can't do everything at one time. Can you give me some idea of what that big picture cost looks like?
Right. Now, this sounds like a question for both both testifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again,
but
if we can
do Minnesota now.
We can start maybe Minnesota first and then Minnesota State after that. So, Mr. Berthelsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Yeah, so the university, and I know Minnesota State as well, we do a thorough facility condition assessment, and we track the condition of all of our buildings and all their components, mm-hmm. and be able, in a way that we can project its useful life and how much how we can maintain it to be both safe and functional.
Mm-hmm.
We've projected our big picture numbers, which suggests that we are about $2.4 billion behind the investment that we should have to date, and another $2.4 billion. Anticipated need over the next 10 years. So just to break even, there should be about over $200 million annual investment. So our request, we think, is, you could argue, is modest in that it's about 1 year's worth of what we think we need to be doing to keep up the overall standard from the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Madam Chair, Representative Claiborne, indeed, comparing apples and apples, those things on the Minnesota State College University campus, those systems that have exceeded their useful life and are you know, beyond their expected life and are in what we call backlog, that's about $1 billion compared to the $2.4 billion that Mr. Brilson talked about. And then looking ahead over the next 10 years, our models indicated about a $1.3 billion need as roofs and mechanical systems come due. So total for the Minnesota State system for this 10-year renewal is about $2.3 billion.
Okay. Madam Chair,
may I? Yes, Representative Claiborne.
The reason I ask the question is because I really would like for us to have that full conversation about what it really costs. I mean, people who come before made major investments in these buildings and in these assets for our state. And I just want to make sure that our state knows how much we need in order to make these, preserve these assets. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. And so I just wanted to make sure that we had in the record what those costs really look like, because we also have our state office buildings and things to consider too. So as we go forward with our long-term planning, I would like to keep that full cost in the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is just about the how do you prioritize kind of what the process is, and then how long range? You've talked about 10 years out or whatever. I'm just trying to get a sense of how you kind of begin that process and how you carry it forward, and how long you've got it planned for, and then how you deal with like the emergency issues that come up, as well as those that we don't yet know but in the future are going to be things. So how do they fit into the pattern of how you make that happen?
Madam Chair, Representative Poppy, indeed. We've got two different processes, if you will, one for asset preservation, one for major capital projects. I'll start with the major capital projects first. Our board establishes guidelines of what they want to invest in and focus on in preparation for a bonding year. So right now, our board will be hearing recommendations on guidelines for, believe it or not, the 2022 capital program. So that process, we've got those guidelines then, start a process where our college and universities review their comprehensive facilities plan. So each campus, each college university has a facilities plan that looks out 10 to 15 years about what their physical plant needs are going to be. How are the academic programs being supported by the facilities, and where are some shortfalls? So they've got a list of what those major capital projects are going to be, as well as those asset preservation needs. Those projects then are candidate projects are scored against the board guidelines, and then that's provided to our chancellor to make a recommendation to the board for the individual line item capital projects. So that's the process for prioritization of the line item projects you see for each institution, whether it's MSU Mankato or you'll see Anoka-Ramsey Community College and the business and nursing building that Representative Lilly talked about touring. On the HEPR side, we start with the legislation, or actually the statute that defines what is HEPR. It talks about asset preservation and taking care of the facilities you already have, about energy best practices and such. We don't have the full presentation in front of me, but it's pretty prescriptive in what accounts for HEPR. We make a call out to our campuses, and they look at what their most pressing asset preservation needs are based on a very similar annual facilities assessment, and then they present those to us in priority order, and then we try to integrate those. You know, 54 campuses, and there's as many as, you know, 54 different roofs that need attention at any time, along with mechanical systems and security for doors and that kind of thing. And then that's what we present based on the appetite the board has for bringing based on some models, and that's why you have a $150 million request this session. So that's the two different processes that we have in the Minnesota State system.
For the university, it's very similar that there's always two drivers for capital improvements. One is programmatic, or the academic priorities, and the second is what the facility condition is. And wherever possible, usually it's a combination of those two things. So from the academic side, it's certainly driven by academic planning, strategic plan from the president's priorities of the Board of Regents set that helps set direction for what is they want to achieve and what limitations we may have from the facility side. That may drive, more often than not, newer buildings. or significant changes in what the program is. From the overall, from the facility condition that I talked about, that we have keep a detailed facility condition assessment of all of our facilities, and we track where the when buildings are unable to maintain or still support modern research or quality teaching, or just to be able to function well in a safe, reliable way. We put those things together. We are responsible for maintaining for the Board of Regents annually. We update a 6-year capital plan, but we have a long-term, we have a 10-year kind of look ahead for facility condition. We prioritize individual projects and HEPR lists that are 6 years out. And we bring that annually to the Board of Regents for their review and approval. And so together, those things help set that. Within the HEPR, again, we start with facility condition. We also then take an additional step and look for what buildings do we see worth maintaining. There are some buildings that we know aren't worth continuing to invest in, so we call that a building-by-building assessment. Of those buildings we want to keep and maintain, then we look at criticality. What projects are putting the building or people or programs at risk? What are safety issues that come first? Second is criticality. What if we don't invest will significantly get worse quickly and have a financial impact? And then third is sort of what impact does it have to program? That's sort of the step down list that we do to help identify what to bring forward to you.
Okay. Members, any further questions? All right. Well, hearing no further discussion, Chair Bernardi and testifiers, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, welcome to the committee. The University of Minnesota, Representative Wolgamott is here with House File 363, and it's regarding the University of Minnesota Biomedical Research Facilities to authorize general fund appropriations to also be used to pay for debt service on bonds issues for the clinic research facility and money appropriated. I hope I got that all in the right order. But I wanted to ask Representative Wolgamott if he'd like to move his bill to be referred to Ways and Means.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, we're going to correct that. So just a moment, please. So Representative Wolgamott, would you like to move your motion, and it will be moving on to Capital Investment Committee.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So Representative Wolgamott moves House File 363 to be, will move it to be referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Representative Wolgamott, welcome to your committee, and we may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad to be here. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am here to present House File 3663, which would authorize the University of Minnesota to refinance debt taken out by the university to construct the Biomedical Discovery District buildings on the Twin Cities campus. It would further allow the university to capture these savings from the refinancing and apply them to the design, site acquisition, and pre-construction of the clinical research facility, also on the Twin Cities campus. Some background, Madam Chair and members. In 2008, the state of Minnesota authorized an annual appropriation to the University of Minnesota to support debt service on the Biomedical Discovery District project. The state took this approach versus an appropriation of general obligation bonds. The university then issued the bonds and constructed the project, and the state appropriation services the debt. I'm pleased to report that the project is now fully built and functioning as a premier research facility for our state. Today, Madam Chair and members, many Minnesota homeowners are taking advantage of low interest rates to refinance the mortgages on their homes. The University of Minnesota is seeking a similar approach with the bonds for the Biomedical Discovery District and is requesting the state's authorization to do so. According to the current capital market rates, the university can save approximately $2.1 million per year on the state's appropriation, totaling $33.7 million in savings over the remaining life of the bonds. That's right, $33.7 million in savings. Madam Chair and members, the university also requests authorization to capture the savings from this refinancing and apply it to completion of design and construction documents, acquire land, and begin site preparation and pre-construction services for a clinical research facility. Assuming taxable debt is issued, the university would be able to issue approximately $27.2 million in new debt with the annual savings. And Madam Chair and members, for your reference in your packet, there should be a one-page fact sheet explaining these figures that you can refer to for yourself. As you recall, the university presented the clinical research facility project to this committee on February 18th as part of their overall bonding request. The project is part of the Board of Regents' official legislative request for this session. This legislation will both authorize the university to refinance the bonds as well as use the savings on the CRF project, thereby taking a project off of their legislative request list without the issuance of additional general obligation bonds. Madam Chair and members, with me today is Brian Burnett from the University of Minnesota. He'll speak more to the clinical research facility project and help answer any questions you might have about this project and the debt refinancing proposal. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I hope I can have your support for this initiative.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. And Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota, Brian Burnett, please state your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Brian Burnett, Senior Vice President of the University. And first, I'd like to thank Representative Wolgamott for his support of this legislation and for the university overall. We are grateful for your leadership on this, and we appreciate it very much. I would like to take a few minutes to talk about the university's request for preliminary funding for this clinical research facility on our Twin Cities campus, which this legislation would authorize as part of this debt refinancing savings. The Clinical Research Facility, or CRF, is included on the region's official request in this current year. And if you approve the refinancing of the Biodiscovery District debt, we would ask that you redirect these savings to another important health sciences project on the Twin Cities campus, our Clinical Research Facility. The request before you would fund the preliminary work to acquire the remaining parcels of land we need for the project and to complete the design of this complex, which would be an integrated care and research facility. The clinical research facility, as you heard from Dr. Toller earlier this session, is a key component of the university's plan to increase the medical school's rankings by increasing patient access to clinical trials and gathering data from patient visits to improve clinical outcomes, thereby improving lives of Minnesotans. The proposed project would be located on a site adjacent to the existing clinics and surgery center, as an essential component of clinical research is access to patients. The requirement to do that research where the patient receives care makes it difficult to remodel existing space elsewhere on the university campus. The university's $27 million request includes $9.8 million to acquire the parcels on the block across the street from the clinics and surgery center. This is highlighted on the one-page fact sheet on the back side. The request also includes $12.5 million for design of the project and $4.4 million for site preparation and pre-construction services, along with project management fees. As Representative Wolgamott noted, this, with the state's authority, we would use the savings captured in this refinancing for these expenses. In earlier testimony before this committee, Dr. Toler suggested that the full cost of this project could be between $200 and $300 million. To clarify, this estimate includes the full project costs, not all of which would be covered by the university or state support. For example, full construction costs of the project are dependent on several factors, including final design of the facility. Potential state and university funding for the project would cover the core facility costs to meet the university's clinical research requirements. Our estimates place this at between $130 and $145 million, but yet to be determined until we do the design. The total project would include several components funded from other non-state sources. This includes parking, mHealth clinics, and consolidated hospital laboratories. Funding for these additional costs would come from other university sources, such as parking revenues, as well as from our clinical partners. The details of these additional potential components are still being resolved. Again, why we need to do the design of this project. We certainly understand and recognize that this is a significant investment, but we believe it is strategically important for the future of Minnesota's healthcare system. This project puts patient activities near the patients and vacates obsolete spaces elsewhere in the health science districts around the university. Further, it achieves a goal of improving our health science programs while having us move toward eventually vacating and demolishing the obsolete old Mayo Hospital building in the core of the health sciences complex. Again, thank you, Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, for your consideration of this initiative. I'm happy to answer any questions that you or the members may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wolgamont, thank you very much for bringing this forward. I just have a couple questions for clarification. So you kind of, I think, have covered much of this. But if the legislation allows you to refinance, and then who's paying for the refinancing? So I think you're kind of alluded to some of that. And then so the profits or the gap, essentially, would your plan is for that to go back into the U and then fund this other facility. Is that an accurate assessment?
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Yes, Representative, what we would do is take the payment stream from the state. The commitment stays level. But because of interest rates being where they're at now, we can stretch that money even further and put the gap or the savings we would do by refinancing these bonds towards this other project without adjusting the state's obligation whatsoever, either annual appropriation or any GO debt. That's where we think we're stretching existing state dollars, existing state commitment to the university in furtherance of our capital needs, and taking one off of the list candidly with a creative way of stretching state dollars.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the answers. I think it's interesting. It sounds a little exciting that you're thinking outside the box and thinking of other ways. I hate to go back to the visit that the Capital Investment Committee again had, and Chair Bernardi, you were there, but we heard from the doctor of the medical health program. Sorry, I don't know the exact name, but that gentleman was amazing, and I don't know if you want to capture some of his comments and some of yours maybe after I'm done, but I thought it was really powerful work and that they're doing in that area, and if we could fund that as well, with this interesting, maybe creative way, maybe too creative, but it's good, I think. So anyways, I'm glad you're thinking and trying to figure out different ways.
Mr. Burnett, it's time for channeling now, I guess.
I'll work on that. That's a hard one. Thank you, Madam Chair. What I would say is, if you think about the history of your university medical school and the inventions that have come from this, including the pacemaker, the first open heart transplant in world history came from the University of Minnesota. I get chills just saying that to you. And those are the types of advances, investments made by prior legislators have made at the university in the lives of people around the world, not just Minnesotans. And when you think about what Dr. Toler and his team are doing and working on solutions for cancer and pediatric issues around the state and autism and things that we're working on, it's just really exciting to be a part of. And so we feel like, as stewards of state dollars, we owe it to you to bring you in a solution that could actually stretch your dollars further with an existing commitment you've already made to the university. And we think this is a very viable and appropriate way to spend what we should take advantage of right now in this interest rate environment.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, and thank you for channeling the doctor. I don't know if the chair would consider somehow maybe having the doctor come to this committee, because I really, some of the things that he was saying just were really quite magical and life-changing, as you mentioned. So I don't know if it fits into our agendas, but it'd certainly be nice if all members could hear what we were able to hear that night.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. I believe Dr. Tolar was at our last meeting for the University of Minnesota when we first presented at the beginning of the session and what your priorities are. I'm getting nods, right?
He was.
Yep.
He was. He didn't really
talk about this project per se. Okay. We'll take note to that. Yep. Okay.
I'm sure he would welcome an invitation from this committee to come and present on what they're working
doesn't
on.
Doesn't he have patients to be taking care of, right?
He does have patients as well.
Right. Okay. So, Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so these are university-issued bonds, correct?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you. Yes, these are issued by the regions.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Mr. Burnett, because the state is paying for the debt service on this, is that why you need state authorization to refinance?
Mr. Burnett.
Yes, Mr. Chair, exactly. The state's paying 75%. If you read the underlying, the university was paying 25%. And because the appropriation said to do these limited projects, if we want to stretch those dollars and do one more, that's why we're coming forward to ask. When we issue university debt that doesn't involve state money, we're refinancing and looking for ways to make it less expensive all the time. And we don't typically ask for state legislative authorization. In this case, this whole project emanated from the state's support of our biodiscovery district. So in that sense, we do need your permission to do this.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so because, or I should say, what I understand is that from the savings of refinancing, you want to put that state money into this clinical research facility, correct?
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that's exactly right. We'd like to take the gap. It would generate additional revenue that we can put forth because of interest rates being lower than when we issued the debt 10 years ago, and take that savings and put it towards this capital project, which would take it off our list for state bonding consideration this session.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so are you looking for any other state assistance, whether it's general fund money, state bonds that the state might issue to complement the money that you'd get from the savings that you're putting into the CRF?
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Candidly, we need to design this project and get our arms around the scope, which is why we're asking for the design money and to get the land to be able to put it together. And that would be something we would consider for a future request that the regions would have to bring forward. But at this time, there is no formal request from the regions to the state to fund this building. Candidly, we need to get a scope with this money figured out so we can look at financing opportunities and consider whether we would seek state dollars or not. So that is not a given at this time, and we need to get our arms around that piece.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so what exact part of the project for the clinical research facility would be undertaken through the savings from the refinancing?
Mr. Burnett.
So there'd be essentially four parts. One, we would do the design. We would hire an architectural firm to design the building. Second, we would spend about $9 million of the $27 million to actually buy real estate that we do not own at this time where we need to put this facility. And then the last piece would be project management and actually site preparation. There's a number of houses that have to come down. There's getting the site ready for a very complex building. So there's really three to four components: project management, and I believe it's on the fact sheet how it breaks down the $27 million. But a piece of it is the design of the building.
Representative Lean, it looks like this sheet. Yeah, you got it. Okay.
So I believe it's all spelled out right there, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I have an actual question myself. Who gets engaged in planning and the design? Who does the contractor engage? So what, I'd like to know that. Is it just doctors? Is it, I'd like to know who's involved.
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. What we do is we assemble a team with our capital project and management team within University Service and Vice President Bertelson's shop, and they put a team together, but there's a huge programmatic piece that our the folks and our architects and our designers who know how to tie this building into the campus don't know the program, and so we bring in subject matter experts from the affected area. We would do that on the ICD building from the College of Education. We do the same thing with the chemistry building. The chemistry faculty would be involved in designing the chemistry building. So in this case, we would be bringing in faculty from the medical school and those that have been designated by Dr. Tolar to help set the program. And together, we put together what's called the programming document. We have to be at a certain place where we would probably, in this case, hire an architectural firm first so that we know. And then once we have a project funded, we would then engage a contractor formally to be our contractor of record to construct the project. So that's a little bit down the road. For now, it's about putting the program plan together with an architect, an engineer, and designing how we bring this to life and what those spaces would look like.
And I would just encourage when people are at the table making decisions, it would be important to make sure that the table of power is expanded to people that might not normally be there, like line workers who work in these buildings, patients, people of different backgrounds and genders and skin color, and just they oftentimes don't have their voices heard, and this building is going to serve them and their needs, and it'd be really important to have their voices on this project.
So noted. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thanks, Representative Mogulma, for bringing this forward. Thank you, University of Minnesota, for thinking outside the box. It's always nice to know we don't have to ask for new money sometimes. We can use existing money in a different way. One comment I have, because I've just been in about a four-month process here, with myself physically, I see the parking lot's going to be gone where the new clinic building's going to go. Is there going to be a parking lot with that or in that facility, or would that be like a parking ramp across the street? Or just want to know what kind of situations could be. And I'm actually doctoring just down the street here on the Smith Avenue, and they've got the neatest thing, valet parking. Anybody's had, you know, surgery on their knees or back or anything like that? Man, you just give the guy $6 and you're done. You don't have to park it, you don't have to walk. And just wonder if that's maybe part of the consideration of the new design.
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, we absolutely need to solve the parking issue on that block. What we're thinking about is parking below the building, which we did not build at the Clinics and Surgery Center. And for your information, across the street at the Clinics and Surgery Center today, you can have your car valet parked anytime for the same time. And just north of this property, so just to the north, we have that major Oak Street ramp that also serves to support the Clinics and Surgery Center today. But we need to add parking if we're going to put more patient visits. So part of the piece about that this wouldn't be state supported, we would use parking revenue, and because the parking is an enterprise of the university, our goal is to actually build parking to the level we can below it. The water table's high, we know that, so there's a limit to how far down we can go. But that's part of this whole project of spending the design money to figure out how much parking can we fit underneath, how do we pay for that part, and then how do we sit the clinics on top. But parking is absolutely something we need to solve.
All right, thank you.
President Daniels, you're thinking about patients too. So thank you.
Hey, I are one.
Yeah. Well, get well wishes to you. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more line of questioning here, kind of along the same lines where I was going before. We all got a sheet here from the nonpartisan staff, and it says, in part, the university's request for state general obligation bond funding for 2/3 of that was not included in the governor's bonding recommendations for 2020. So did you make that request sort of as a backup plan in case this does not go through?
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, in our official request that went through MMB to you, the governor's office recommended our top four priorities, which was HEPR, ICD, AB Anderson, and chem teaching. This was not on the governor's list because they felt like they had allocated what they could to the University of Minnesota. We were always going to bring forward, assuming the regions concurred, and they have formally, bring forward this refinancing alternative to put towards our capital projects. We just think, again, it's good stewardship of state dollars. We should be getting the lowest possible interest costs for those precious state dollars you're allocating to the university. And in this case, we can put those towards a project that was down the list a little bit and didn't make the governor's list, very candidly. So the governor had a list of how far he was willing to go for the university, and he picked our top four out of five. Again, we feel like this is a very appropriate way of taking what was meant for the Biodiscovery District and tying it to the health sciences, which would be the natural extension of the research done in the Biodiscovery District. So.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, no, not a question. I certainly understand, you know, wanting to have backup plans and things. So now with that, I now have a better understanding of what you want to do here, you know, just some of the moving parts and everything. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is pretty simple. When we create facilities like this, can you help me understand what that would do for being able to draw talent to the University of Minnesota and what kind of economic advantage that would give our state going forward?
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Cleavorn. This is absolutely critical to us, being able to attract talented researchers and faculty from around the country. We pride ourselves on having some of the best faculty, if not the country of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've talked to this committee before. We're the eighth ranked public research university in the United States. We compete with other universities, and we bring competitive research dollars to the state. And what do? We put people to work paying taxes to the state of Minnesota, to the city of St. Paul, city of Minneapolis. We're an economic engine. And what I would say to you is this would only serve to continue to feed the economic engine. And the medical research piece of our research enterprise is the largest single piece. That is the largest piece of all the research done at the University of Minnesota is done by the medical school. So this obviously is taking their research and how do we improve patient lives in a facility that would be welcoming to patients and in an area where we're already doing a great deal of treatment. So it would absolutely up our game in bringing talented researchers to the state.
Okay, Representative Cleavorn, and then we're gonna move to audience testimony.
So when we are competing for NIH grants and things like that, would this type of facility aid us in being able to be more competitive in those grants?
Mr. Burnett.
Yes, thank you, Chair Bernardi. Representative Cleavorn, absolutely. Our plan is to move the Clinical Translational Research Institute in there into better space. They are one of only 8 or 10 in the country that is funded by NIH. So we've already got some signature programs that need better space in addition to expanding our capabilities. We absolutely believe this will make us more competitive.
Thank you.
Okay, and as I was wrapping up, we do have one more person that I was saying we were going to move forward, was raising her hand at the same time. So Representative Vang, and then we'll move on to people in the audience. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about the timeline, because once this is refinanced and the savings is about $2.1 million each year, correct? How long do you think this project is going to come into being shovel ready, or what is this timeline to be if you're expecting to use that $2.1 million saving each year to go towards financing that new research facility?
Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. So the timeline of this project is probably 2 years to being ready to think about putting together the financing package. It's generally a year to 18 months, especially in complicated projects. The $2 million a year that we would save would be paid out over a period of time through the bonds, and what we're doing is just taking the existing revenue stream and making, stretching it to go for one more project. So it'll be paid out over time, over the remaining life of the bonds that we would refinance. But the process to get ready for a shovel-ready project is probably 18 to 24 months.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on House File 3663? Okay. Seeing none, I would like to ask the author if they would like to make any closing comments.
Madam Chair and committee members, let's do our part to support the incredible research that happens at the University of Minnesota. Let's get this passed and send on its way to capital investment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Olgamont. Would you like to renew your motion?
So moved. So renewed.
Okay, so Representative Wolgamott renews House File 3663 to be referred to capital investment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, members. That wraps it up today, and we will be back tomorrow. Okay, thanks. We are adjourned.